Good morning, everyone. My name's Dave, and welcome to Insights for Health, brought to you by The Healthy Habit at 451 St. Clair Street in Chatham. Our topic today is inflammation. Let's put out the fire. And joining us is Dr. Kate Riom. Dr. Kate is a naturopathic doctor, an educator of natural health, and the author of the book Vitamin K2 and the Calcium Paradox, How a Little-Known Vitamin Can Save Your Life. Dr. Kate is a frequent guest on both radio and television, and it's always a privilege to have her on Insights for Health. Good morning, doctor, and welcome back to our show.
Good morning. Thanks. Good to be back.
Inflammation. Back in February 2004, Time magazine wrote about inflammation. They called it the silent killer. Why is it called the silent killer, doctor?
Well, this is because inflammation is a process that can happen in the body that can be quite insidious, that can, in some cases, pass unnoticed and yet lead to a lot of serious health consequences. You know, silent killer diseases, diseases that we refer to as silent killers, like heart disease and even cancer to a certain extent, in other words, they can progress unnoticed for a long time until they're deadly. These always have an inflammatory component to them, and the inflammation that should be helping us or could be helping us is working against us.
So inflammation is the beginning of those sort of things?
Very often inflammation is the beginning of those things.
Okay.
And as we go along or as the disease progresses, inflammation can be exacerbating the problem.
So inflammation can be both good and bad, harmful and beneficial. What's the difference?
Well, inflammation is ultimately a healing response. This is our body's way of healing from things. And everybody intuitively understands inflammation because everybody's had, say, you know, a twisted ankle or an injury that got swollen or painful or hot. And they know that while that is still painful or swollen, for example, that healing is not complete. And so we do know that this is a healing process, but the problem is that when the inflammation persists and the healing process and the healing cycle isn't complete, then the inflammation that should be working for us can be working against us. It can lead to tissue destruction and other aspects of loss of function at the cellular level. There's lots of ways in which inflammation can get out of control and lead to problems.
So, and I just want to maybe come back at that same question a different angle. So let's say you're working in the kitchen or a guy's out in the garage, tool slips, the knife slips, you cut yourself. That's inflammation because it's going to turn red. It wants to heal. But then that goes away after the healing process is complete. But then if you have arthritis, colitis, migraines, those sort of things, that's inflammation, but it remains. Is there is that a difference there, or is it, what's happening, I guess?
There is a difference there. There's a couple differences. First of all, in the example you gave of an injury, in that case, a cut in the kitchen, or like, you know, the example I gave earlier of that twisted ankle or whatever it is,
yeah.
There's a process of inflammation, healing, and then it's complete and it's resolved and the injury has been healed and the inflammation goes away. When we have conditions, anything with an itis, arthritis, colitis, these kinds of things, there's a process by which, for whatever reason, and there's lots of reasons for this, that the inflammation doesn't go away because the healing isn't complete. There is something that's preventing the body from healing, so the inflammation persists. And then, ironically, the inflammation can become part of the problem, and the body can have a harder time healing because of the inflammation. It can get, you know, spinning out of control.
So with silent inflammation, there's really no pain to that?
Exactly. So conditions like heart disease are classically absolutely painless until there is a heart attack. And even cancer, as the example I gave before, it's often painless until very end stages, for example. So a lot of these conditions and even things that affect our brain and cognitive function have inflammatory components, but they're not necessarily and frequently not painful. And so this is how they can go unnoticed.
Yeah, I read what depression and dementia are results of inflammation.
Absolutely. We are now understanding these conditions to ultimately be the result of inflammation. And this is a specific type of inflammation called neuroinflammation. So by definition, this is inflammation that's affecting the brain, but that, again, is not painful, so you're not getting headaches, for example. But it can affect your mood or your cognitive abilities, the ability of your brain to function. It can affect different areas of the brain. And so these are ways that inflammation can affect our health, a different aspect of our health that, again, might not be obviously inflammation because they're not painful.
So neuroinflammation, is that a new word?
It's a relatively new term, maybe only in the last decade or so, but there is even, for example, a journal of neuroinflammation. This is well established to be a factor that affects the health of our brain, and that there can be inflammatory components being produced in the brain itself that is affecting the brain tissue, but that, again, is, you know, we're not being alerted to it by those classic symptoms of pain and other types of irritation.
Yeah, that's where it's silent again.
Exactly.
So, doctor, we've been talking about the brain for a moment or two here, but it goes through the whole body. So what's the root? I mean, what causes inflammation?
Well, there's lots of causes of inflammation. The body will respond by producing inflammatory compounds in an attempt to heal from any kind of injury, and whether it's that cut in the kitchen or that twisted ankle, any kind of injury. The body will also produce inflammation in regards or in response to infection. So if that cut were to get infected, we know that it takes longer to heal, and you can see that. Or even if it's a virus, for example, the body will produce inflammation in an attempt to heal from a cold or the flu, as well as any kind of irritation. Whether that's irritation is, you know, the tag on the back of your shirt rubbing against your skin, making that red and painful, or rubbing, you know, say, brush with a chemical against your arm, or irritation that can happen from foods that we're eating that are actually bothering us in ways and irritating our digestive tract in ways we don't realize. And amazingly, even psychological stress, the body will respond to this like an irritant and will produce inflammatory compounds in response to stress.
So psychological stressors.
Yes, psychological stressors are irritants to the body, and the body will respond with inflammation just like it would that, you know, cut finger or twisted ankle.
That's amazing. And you said our gut can be affected?
Yes, and this is probably the one area where a lot of inflammation starts or persists or is sort of exacerbated by things that we're eating. And so there are compounds in food that are, some of them, that are especially problematic, notoriously problematic, and they may even be things that we're eating on a daily basis. Gluten is infamous for this, for example. Gluten is a compound that is found in wheat and some other types of grains that can be notoriously irritating to the intestines, even if you don't have celiac disease. Gluten can be irritating the connections between your intestinal cells, causing small amounts of inflammation there, but then the body reacts to this, and it can affect the health in general. So there's lots of things that we eat that can promote inflammation just by the effect that they have on our digestion.
Yeah. So again, the regular or the most common inflammations that we know, where there's pain and discomfort, that's easy to measure. If I've twisted my ankle, I know to stay off it until it feels better, and then I know I can walk on it. Is there a way, doctor, that we can measure silent inflammation?
Well, there are a few tests for inflammation. One of the most common ones is something called C-reactive protein, or CRP.
Okay.
And this is a compound that the body will produce when there is inflammation in the body. And so this can be measured. You know, if you're going to see your family doctor or GP getting a checkup, they may already be ordering this test. If not, it's one that's easy to check for. However, although this is a good marker of inflammation, it doesn't necessarily tell you where the inflammation is coming from. It's not specific in that sense, but it's still a good test and one that's even used in research settings to measure inflammation.
So it's an indicator that silent inflammation is occurring somewhere.
Exactly. So in, particularly in cases where you're not in pain, if you have a high C-reactive protein, you do want to ask then, okay, where is this inflammation coming from?
So doctor, how do we put out the fire?
Well, there's lots of ways to put out the fire. First of all, you know, we want to look at the kinds of things that cause inflammation and essentially do the opposite of that if we can. So for example, being physically inactive has been shown to be inflammatory. And so by being physically active, by engaging in some regular exercise, that is often a anti-inflammatory, a way to lower C-reactive protein, for example, or other markers of inflammation. So get out there and be active. As well as, you know, our diet. I mentioned diet is a common way we can cause inflammation. And we eat 3 to 5 times a day for some people, and that is a great opportunity to either put the gas or the brakes on inflammation. And so looking at foods and becoming aware of foods that are pro or anti-inflammatory. Anti-inflammatory foods include foods that are high in omega-3 essential fatty acids, foods that are high in fiber, and foods that are high in antioxidants. So your colorful fruits and vegetables, green leafies, and lots of herbs and spices.
So eat the rainbow.
Eat the rainbow, yes, with some good fat on it.
Yeah. and the Mediterranean diet.
Perfect example, because the Mediterranean diet has lots of green leafies, colorful fruits and vegetables, olive oil, fish. It's a great example of a healthy diet, and one of the reasons why it's healthy is because it tends to be anti-inflammatory.
So you mentioned exercise. So I look at exercise as being helpful with strength and flexibility and overall health. How does it help the neuroinflammation that you mentioned earlier?
Oh, this is really interesting research. Exercise is helpful for the brain in lots of different ways, but specifically, exercise seems to control or turn down, put out the fire on the inflammation in certain areas of the brain. The hippocampus is one of them. So that the hippocampus is the area of the brain that gets attacked in Alzheimer's disease. It is a part of the brain responsible for helping us to make new memories. And so by being physically active, you actually can reduce inflammation in that part of the brain. It also, by the way, helps you grow new brain cells.
Exercise does.
Exercise does, yes. Exercise has been shown to help grow new brain cells, again, specifically in that part of the brain, the hippocampus.
Excellent. Doctor, we're coming up to the break. So after the commercial, can we maybe talk about some supplements that are helpful to alleviate inflammation?
Definitely.
All right.